switch that.
Right. Can you hear me? Yeah.
I'll make sure that the mic is working now.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. Going to get started with our next talk. We have Veronica here. And she's going to tell us a little bit about bridging the gap and about how classical software development can really be used a lot in quantum.
Hi, I'm Veronica. Thank you for being here. I'm so happy and honored to be here. FOSDEM has been probably my favorite conference for many years, so very happy to present in this room. So who am I? I am Veronica Lopez. I'm a distributed systems engineer. But originally, I studied physics first, and then for many personal reasons, I switched into the computer world. Although, to be fair, even when I was in the physics world, I was always or spending most of my time on computer land with simulations, with Fortran, then with Python, and I always gravitated towards there. But then when I made the decision to switch, it became mostly computers. So this was still at my student level, postgraduate type of courses. So as I said, I would look for all the intersections between physics, maths, and actual computers. So one time I came across quantum computing. This was a long time ago. People usually tell me that I look younger than I am. So this was over 12 years ago. So it was very interesting for me that I started exploring quantum computing from the physics side. That the focus on physics from the physics side was mostly the maths, the logic gates, all the theory, all the quantum theory. And then the computing part was like an afterthought. And then when I switched to computer science, it was the other way around. I would still attend the courses and read the papers, sit the tests, but the focus was completely different. They did not care that much about the maths. It was intensive algorithm studies, etc., and just some maths to understand the papers. But I think you get the picture. So it became really evident for me that whoever would master this area, I mean, this is in the mind of a silly young students. So whoever would master this area at some point in time would have to be good at both disciplines. Or at least now, in hindsight, I don't think that to be good at quantum computing, you have to be an expert on both sides, but at least having notions of what is happening on the other side of the world. So going a little bit back, all of this story and personal anecdotes are literally the thread of this talk. So bear with me. I have points. So I'm also a certified yoga instructor, and this is very important for all of this because I am obsessed with interconnectedness, you know, of systems, of particles, of quantum things, of people, and how some node here, Kubernetes, will affect the nodes here that we didn't know about. So that is basically distributed computing. So fast forward to many years later, and that I became a computer scientist and I started having jobs, I got very interested in distributed systems. So that has been my main area. And nowadays, I work at a company called OddZ, and we have this tool called SpiceDB that I'm going to talk about it later. It's open source. And yeah, so this is a bit of the background combined in all these things. So from time to time, obviously, I as you might not know now, I do not work with qubits. I do not work with quantum things directly, at least. But it has always been a passion of mine to still belong to this world, at least from the sidelines. So from time to time, I still have all my subscriptions to the journals and stuff. So when I am waiting for things to compile, I go and read little bits of Nature and stuff. So, you know, in the past couple of years, there have been different achievements in the quantum world, quantum computing world, especially from Google. So every time that that there's a new milestone, a new achievement, the way it's communicated is that, oh, is this new thing? I don't even have the words, you know, but they have to make it sound grand for good purposes, but also sometimes it sounds a bit too pompous. So I say this with love. So my colleagues and people that are science adjacent, meaning that are technical enough to understand some concepts but who do not have a background in physics, usually tend to go by what the marketing of those announcements go by. This is important because, and relevant to this, because every time that there is a new announcement of quantum computing milestone, people ask me, oh, is it true that now they proved that there are multiple universes existing at the same time? And is it true that at CERN, they created a black hole that people don't know about, and I'm like, no. So, and it's cool when people ask me, and so then I can go on and tell them like, oh no, I see where you come from, but that's not. But the issue comes when someone shares like a news article on, I don't know, Slack or whatever, affirming like, whoa, see guys, the multiple universe theory is proven, blah, blah, blah. And then I am like, yeah. And sometimes I have the will to explain. Most of the time I don't. So whenever I see things like that, it prompts me to go and do, and I don't know, like do my research again. So with all of this, I'm trying to say that this talk is about my very informed, but still my opinions. So what I want you to take away from this is that people from all walks of technical life can contribute to the quantum computing world. Layers of specialization, like in the classical computing world, are needed. So it's okay if you're not good at maths, but be aware of that you need linear algebra. Now it's very popular because AI and crypto and all those things. So learn your AI, your linear algebra. Sorry. But you don't have to be an expert. So quantum computing isn't an isolated quantum bubble anymore. Right now, it's not as if we are going to wake up in 2027 and suddenly say, like, you know what, guys? Computers are obsolete now. We now have to use quantum computers from now on. And whoever does not know the Shor's algorithm, won't have a job anymore. I think as the previous talks and the upcoming ones will explain to you, that we are already in the middle of a quantum revolution in computer land, where some bits are already in use. There are some companies in the real world, in Silicon Valley too, that are hiring software engineers for regular software engineering jobs, you know, for Kubernetes stuff, for database stuff, for performance stuff, that don't necessarily require you to have a background in physics or advanced maths. So that's a really nice gateway to start there. I think I would have done that had those options been possible back when I was young. So this is a very silly example for you to understand what I mean with that this is a continuum. So for example, IBM Quantum organizes multiple users' jobs based on priority and availability. So though the execution is quantum computing, the prioritization of the jobs is handled by an algorithm, a classical prioritization algorithm, you know, sorting algorithm. So your job as a software engineer is understanding priorities like any other system. You know? Example two, aggregation of results. Again, how you, in this era, even in classical computing, having good visualizations, knowing what data is signal, what data is noise, all that, you have to be attuned to what's important in your system. So it's no different in a quantum computing system. It's like, and it's even more important because in quantum land, we will get way more data, way more noise, way more results that are many times full of noise. So with your training as a software engineer, you can actually not only help, but tell scientists how to discern from these things. So I have other examples. But the most important part, and that I took from distributed systems, is to design for failure. Because things will fail. It does not matter how good we are, how many PhDs we have, how long we've been coding from 6 years old, whatever. So this was a critical mind shift for me, at least, because I started coding as a scientist, which meant that my code had to be perfect for the journals, perfect for the experiments, like one shot. You had one shot at very sophisticated computers. I think right now it's a bit like that for like quantum computing time is so precious these days. But that meant, at least in my side of science, that those algorithms, that code, were not always the most efficient, were not always the cleanest, were not always the fastest, but they had to be accurate. So when I transitioned into software engineering, I would try to have code that was perfect in terms of like accurate, but it took me a while to have that. And if you work in software engineering, you know, like ship. And I started working in Silicon Valley, so I was like, no, it does not matter if it's horrible, but it has to, you have to ship things fast. So that means that you will fail a lot because of human errors, but also because distributed systems work like that. I won't emphasize that more. So I think that in quantum land, this is super, super important. You will see in the slides that I'm giving more examples about that. But the main topic or subtopic about this idea of fault tolerance comes, or at least to me, comes from the quantum error correction. That is one of the hardest problems to solve these days, as you might know or not, but this can span its own conference. And with quantum computing, it's basically, the way I see it, failure with more errors. It is very expensive to, not only in cash, but in time and in qubits and stuff, to correct these things. So your experience as a software engineer helps with that. And last but not least, security. So every fortnight, we host session on YouTube that is free for my company, where people ask different things. So a few times people have asked us if quantum encryption will make our tool obsolete or similar tools obsolete. The answer is no. And well, SpiceDB provides role-based access control, and it's open source. And we have an annotated paper because it's based on Zanzibar, the Google paper. But since Zanzibar, the code is closed source, we have to figure out how they did it. So we have a paper with our annotations. I recommend you to read it. So this is just tangential, but important for my point of, will quantum encryption make our solutions obsolete? And the answer is no, and not just because I'm selling that, but really because we will still have to have role-based access control. We will still have to need encryption of all sorts. So what we need to do is evolve with the systems, like adapt the existing algorithms in the classical ones to interact, and I have a word that I don't remember right now, but converge with the quantum ones. And eventually, one of my colleagues likes to say that a definition of success in our jobs is to when we manage to automate ourselves out of a job. Yeah. So because that meant that we really understood the assignment, we were efficient, we executed, and we did it well. So we can only dream of the day where quantum computing tasks are automatable and with not without errors, but managed errors so that they can grow and have real usage in the world at scale. So I hope you found this useful. If you have any questions, I am on Blue Sky. Also, you can write me an email. And if you have the time and you like it, please give us a star on SpiceDB. And I'm happy to chat here or afterwards or on the internet. Thank you very much for having me. I have time for one question? Or yeah, one question? Yeah, over there. There is no microphone.
What would you suggest to get started in programming some basic Q-sharp or other languages?
Yeah, in the slides.